Committee on Human Services and Women's Wellness. House Bill 3113, which if you've come to testify on that, we're going to be having a work session on that Friday, this Friday on the 20th. And I'm going to open up a public hearing on 2535 and close a public hearing on 2535, open up a work session on 2535. The reason we are doing this is that this bill is going to the Revenue Committee, and they will be having a hearing at 1 o'clock today in Hearing Room A. So if anybody is here to testify on that bill, it's at 1 o'clock, Hearing Room A, for the Revenue Committee. I'm closing. Oh, and I've got to.
Madam Chair, I would move House Bill 2535 to the Revenue Committee with no recommendation.
Representative Gelser moves House Bill 2535 to the Revenue Committee without reservation. Any discussion?
Without recommendation.
Without recommendation, without reservation.
And without words.
And without reservations, yeah. Without recommendation. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Do we have to take a voice vote?
You should.
Okay. Susan?
Representative
Gelser? Oh, aye. Representative Gilliam? Aye. Representative Maurer?
Aye.
Representative Wilson?
Yes.
Gentleman?
Aye.
Representative Gilliam, did you explain to him what he just voted yes on? Thank you.
He just voted for a beer tax.
He just voted for a beer tax. Representative Gilliam, what did you just vote for?
Madam Chair, thank you for asking. And I have been studying 2535 this morning diligently.
And you will be voting to send that on to the House Revenue Committee that will be heard today at 1 o'clock in Hearing Room A, correct?
Yes, that's correct, Madam
Chair.
Thank
you. Great. All right. Thank you, Susan. I close the work session on 2535 and open up the work session on 2780.
Thank you, Chair. Just to clarify, House Bill 2780 is a bill that would appropriate money from the general fund to housing and community services for the foster grandparent program, the senior corps program, and the retired senior volunteer program. There is one amendment. The dash one amendment to 3524 would ensure that the state money is used to fund volunteer stipends in these programs. That the amendment would ensure that the federal wage and hour laws would not be triggered by these stipends.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any John Mullen, John here. John, on work session for 2780, would you like to come up and tell us about that and about the amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, John Mullen with the Oregon Law Center. Worked with your committee staff on this amendment, and basically what it does is that it ties these programs, should they receive funding, to the federal regulations that, in essence, give low-income people the opportunity to get stipends without it being considered wages and compensation in that manner. And so there wouldn't be a wage and hour issue if we include this language in the Dash 1 amendments.
And that's what the Dash 1 amendments do, correct?
Yes, that's
okay.
Correct.
Great. So any question about that, committee?
Madam Chair, I would move the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2780.
Representative Gilman. I saw Gilman. Well, his name is on the bill. I just was looking at it. Representative Gelser moved. Dash 1 minute. You can see this is a very serious committee. Representative Gelser moves the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2780. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? All right.
Madam Chair, I would move House Bill 2780 as amended to the floor with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
It goes directly. Let me confirm.
All right.
Directly to Ways and Means. So it should be to Ways and Means. Your motion should be to Ways and Means.
Okay. Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2780 as amended to the Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Gelser moves House Bill 2780 as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Susan, you want to call the roll?
Representative
Allen?
Aye.
Representative Gelser?
Aye.
Representative
Kotek? Aye.
Aye.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
Chairman
May? Aye. House Bill 2780A, having received the constitutional majority, has passed. I will close the work session on House Bill 2780 and open up a work session. You're ready?
I am.
All right. On House Bill 3524. And let's let Andy talk first, and we'll let the other Andy talk.
Thank you, Chair Tomei. House Bill 3524 would establish a mental health database to assist law enforcement officers in assisting mentally ill individuals to obtain medical, health, and social services. It would become operative July 1st of 2008. There is a -1 amendment which would significantly modify the bill. It would create a 13-member task force to identify issues, explore solutions, and make recommendations about this issue to the 75th legislature. The task force would be required under the amendment to submit a report no later than October 1st of 2008.
Thank you. Representative Olson, yeah. You've been working on this.
I have been. Madam Chair, you're aware that we had our meeting. We brought the whole group down to Albany back on the 29th of last month, and during that time period, we received quite a bit of testimony. As a matter of fact, I have about 8 pages worth of notes on that. But there was a number of concerns, and there was a lot of good information that we received, and it was obvious at that point that really to get to where we needed to go, and I know we'd had discussion about that probably a task force would be the best direction to go with trying to resolve this problem. So that's what the -1s are all about, and as Mr. Smith mentioned, Andy Smith mentioned, that's where we're at with 13 members, and I think it's a good direction to go, and it would give us a great opportunity to sit down and explore and come back then 2 years from now and really be able to move a good solid bill, a good policy. So with that, I would make the motion to move the -1 amendments into House Bill 3524.
Representative,
I had a question about the amendments, and I apologize, Representative Olson, I didn't see these until just the second, but I'm looking at the makeup of the committee, and I'm wondering if it would be possible and if we would have time to adjust it just a little bit to be sure that we have appropriate representation from the mental health community. In the bill, it lists 5 members who have demonstrated interest in facilitating law enforcement interaction with mentally ill persons. These members may be selected from state and local agencies, advocacy groups for the mentally ill, mental health clients, and their families and caregivers in the medical community. And I appreciate the intent in that, but in a lot of task forces and bills that relate to people with mental illness or people with disabilities, it's a little bit more narrower in that description, just to make sure that those people are at the table. And I would suggest maybe of those 5, maybe naming where 3 of those come from and including someone from the Oregon Advocacy Center, someone from NAMI, and someone from the Association of County Mental Health Programs, and then leaving the other 2 in that more general description. But I'm just guessing from the mental health community and the mental health advocates, there might be more comfort in a task force looking at an issue, as we heard, that's as sensitive as this one, if we have very explicit representation from advocates mm-hmm. on that task force.
I'm sure I understand what Representative Gelser is saying regarding that, wanting to be more specific with the representation on that team and everything. That was my intent, to have them at that. Personally, I don't think it's necessary to specifically identify them in the bill itself. I mean, I was going to give them a call and personally invite them, because to me it's critical that they're there, especially from the testimony that we've received and the support that we've received them as well.
So it says in E, line 19, that mental health clients and their families and caregivers. So it's your intent that NAMI would be involved and people who are clients.
That's correct.
Right? So I wonder if we couldn't put in a budget note that says that this is what our intent is, and you will be leading that group, correct?
I probably will be.
Madam Chair, I
follow up.
Thank you. Follow up. I don't doubt your intent, and when I read this, I read that and hear that intent. But the way that it's written, you wouldn't have the opportunity to be appointing the members. They would be appointed. That the apportionment and the appointing would be split between the Speaker, the President of the Senate, and the Governor, and the ability for them to coordinate and make sure that those specific folks were at the table might be difficult, and the language is permissive in terms of may. And I mean, there's a list, and I really want to see, as you do, a great product come out of this. And I'm just very concerned, given the testimony that we had with the concerns from that community, that explicitly putting them in there, as I know is your intent, might create some more comfort and make the product stronger when it comes out on the other end with a broader base of support.
Representative Maurer, you had.
I see, as reading this bill, or the dash one, is that it's the governor's selection. It's not a split between the president of the Senate or speaker of the House. The governor shall appoint the following nine members, and that conversation would be held with the governor, and he would make the determination of who is going to be at that table, and I would assume that you might have a little more influence than some people in that discussion. So I'm comfortable with this language.
Thank you. Representative Cowan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm actually comfortable with the language, too. I think it's very important that group be represented on the task force, and I know that is Representative Olson's intent. So I think that our lines of communication with the governor can be clear enough that's the intent. There's no point in having the task force if those groups aren't represented and we can't meet the needs of the community.
Thank you. Representative Kotex.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I also apologize. I know I see them in my file, but I've just looked at these. I'm a strong believer in having designated consumer representation, and because there's a good possibility that there could be no consumers in that list of five, and especially with the caveat of demonstrated interest in facilitating law enforcement interaction, I don't know how that would be determined. I have concerns about not designating, because other task force that work on particular human service issues normally will say X number of consumer representatives. So I don't think I can support that the way it's written. And I apologize, I didn't get that feedback to Representative Olson earlier. I also have a question about making sure that local law enforcement is represented. And I see the state police, the sheriff's association, the association chiefs of police. And I think this is just my lack of understanding of who they represent. But because I think of the folks at the local level, would that address those? If you could just explain who they represent, that would be helpful.
Sure, Madam Chair.
Representative Olson.
Yeah, Representative Kotek. The makeup of the actually when Representative Gelser and I were looking at this, the real drive on this whole thing is the sheriffs, because they're the gatekeeper, and that's where we were wanting to try to restrict. That's the whole nutshell version of this thing, is that there are too many people that are suffering from mental illnesses that are going to jail. The sheriffs are the number one facilitator for holding the mentally ill in our state. That testimony was given during during Interim Judiciary Committee last year. The point being is that with the sheriffs being there, the chiefs representing all the law enforcement for cities and municipal agencies, as well as the state police, you're capturing everybody from the law enforcement perspective, but it's all focused toward the sheriffs in that. So that's your representation, and that would deal with your concerns for the local part of that.
Follow up?
Thank you, Representative Olson, and thank you, Madam Chair. That helps, I think, on the correction side, and that's actually helpful, because I hadn't thought of it that way. I guess I was thinking of it as there's two parts of the database. once when someone's connected with the jails, but there's that front end when there might be an officer on a call, and so that is that the chiefs of police, they'd have someone who, I'm just wondering how it works in the field for the regular officer on the beat. And then there's the jail aspect, and then there's the, so I don't, but it sounds like that's what the chiefs of police representation would do. Is that correct?
Yeah, Madam Chair, and committee. Also, just for your information, there's another House bill that was heard a couple weeks ago over in Judiciary, and it kind of parallels with this one, where Representative Lem and I, chief sponsored the bill, but it deals with the extension at added hours through Department of Public Safety and Standards and Training, DPSST, for additional training dealing with mental health. So, see, that would plug in really easy with this right here, and you know, kind of sharing your concerns.
Okay. Thank you. What House bill is that? Or do you remember? I'll look it up.
No.
I know which one you're talking about. It's additional training for.
Exactly.
Training. Okay.
Representative Olson, I'm going to leave this up to you. Do you want to bring this back on Friday and see if you can amend some of this language, or shall we pass this along and with a note to the governor's office that could come from the chair stating that from our committee that we would like to make sure that there will be mental health clients involved.
Well, Madam Chair,
NAMI.
Okay, if you would be willing to do that, I think that would probably move this bill today.
I would have interest in moving it today. Would that satisfy you, Representative Gelser?
I think my difficulty is that I appreciate and wholeheartedly believe and accept the intent. However, my experience as an advocate for people with disabilities and people with mental health issues is that this would be alarming to those folks, and I would have a hard time explaining why I didn't include them in a bill that has my name on it, on the top of it. So I support the intent of this bill, and I'm sorry that I didn't see these until this morning, but I have really significant discomfort with not explicitly doing that, and I think it's probably increased by the fact that my name will be on the bill when it comes out on the other end as the chief sponsor of the bill.
Madam Chair. And I hate to have Representative Olson come back, but if he's willing to do that, I would be comfortable with E being amended to have three members designated as it is now, and then with two specifically consumers of mental health services. I mean, something like that would make me more comfortable to vote for it.
And Representative Gelser?
And I would agree with that, but hope that we could specifically call out the Oregon Advocacy Center and the Association of Community Mental Health Programs as people that should be at that table that are very knowledgeable about these issues.
Representative Olson.
I would actually like to have a moment of recess with you.
Sure. We'll have a 5-minute recess. We were discussing the Dash 1 amendment, and Representative Olson.
Madam Chair, I would move that the Dash 1 amendments would be moved into House Bill 3524, and that's with the understanding, too, that as a committee we would draft a letter and have it attached with this bill. Specifically identifying groups such as NAMI, the Oregon Advocacy Center, Oregon Community on Mental Health as part of that.
Okay, and I would ask you to work with Representative Gelson, perhaps Representative Kotek, if she's willing, and we will compose a letter that would be signed by the whole committee that will go on the floor with this and then go on to the governor who will be appointing these folks, so it will be clear who we expect to be on the work group. Any questions about any of that? Representative Kotek.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that's a good way to proceed in the sense that since we heard from so many consumers at the hearing, that I think we have to be crystal clear as the bill goes to the floor about what we mean by those five members, because this is definitely important to not only the agencies who work with these issues, but the individuals themselves. And the clearer we can be with the bill, I think, the more success we'll have, as well as making sure our intent is there. And I think having it with the floor materials is really essential. So
thank you. Okay. Representative Gelser, we would like to pass the DASC 1 amendments, and Representative Olson has suggested that we have a letter that will go on the floor with the bill and that will go on to the governor naming NAMI in the five members that the governor will appoint, the Oregon Advocacy Center and the Oregon Community of Mental Health. So, and then I've asked that you, if you're willing, to work with Representative Olson and perhaps Representative Kotek to come exactly with the list of people who should be included in that group. And then, as I said, that letter will go on the floor with the bill when we vote on it, and it will also go to the governor's office, and the whole committee will sign that.
Okay.
Is that agreeable?
Yes.
Great. All right. So I think we have the Dash 1 amendments. So any further discussion on the Dash 1 amendments? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? All right.
Okay. Madam Chair, I'd move then 3524 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Olson moves House Bill 3524 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. I want to point out this does not go to Ways and Means. There is not a fiscal. So it will go directly to the floor. Any discussion? All right. Great. Susan, would you call the roll, please?
Representative Cowan?
Aye.
Representative
Gilser?
Aye.
Representative Gilliam?
Aye.
Representative Kotek?
Aye.
Representative Maurer?
Aye.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Chair Tomei?
Aye. House Bill 3524 is amended, has received a constitutional majority, and it passes. Thank you, committee. I know it's hard work.
And I would be honored.
Oh, please do. Thank you. Okay. So now we just have an informational hearing on the Oregon Commission on Children and Families, right? Okay. Great. Thank you. And we have told these folks that you will have a half hour. You can take a little bit more if you need to, but we do have to be on the floor at 10, and usually we like to go to our offices first. So if you can hold it pretty close to an hour, that would be great. I'm opening up an informational meeting about the Oregon Commission on Children and Families. And Jean Lassiter. Jean, I've seen for 3 times. Mickey, are you coming up? You aren't on my... Oh, Mickey Lansing. Okay. Salem Phillips and Janet Arends. Good to see you, Mickey.
Good to see you, Representative.
We have other people coming up to this panel? Yeah. Now, where is she going? She's going to...
Let's sit behind Mickey.
No, you're going to sit right up here.
Okay. Thank you. Go ahead and identify yourself.
For the record, my name is Mickey Lansing. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Commission on Children and Families. Chair Tomei and members of the committee, we are here today to present to you recommendations from a multi-agency subcommittee that included not only state agency people, but included community-based organizations, nonprofit organizations, and a wide variety and a diverse group throughout the state to look at the issue of runaway and homeless youth. Last session, in the 2005 session, House Bill 2202 was passed. That bill directed the Oregon Commission on Children and Families to lead a process whereby we would look comprehensively at services and the systems we have in place for homeless and runaway youth. The results of that work is contained in a report that you should have in your hands and includes recommendation around a variety of areas, including funding. The governor's recommended budget had $1 million designated to this group of homeless and runaway youth. The co-chair's budget did not. That $1 million is in our budget bill, the commission's Senate Bill 5504. by supporting the development of a multi-agency, multi-systemic infrastructure, the agencies that deal with these youth, and there are many, are investing in their own success and in the development of an effective safety net for youth. And I might add that this is a population of children and youth who long have not had the designated support and the coordinated infrastructure by all of us that deal with these youth that they really need in order to reach their full potential. And so sitting with me today is Jean Lassiter, who has been coordinating this multi-agency group, Janet Ahrens, and Galen Phipps. So thank you. Does anyone have any questions for me?
Good morning, Chair Tomei and committee members. My name is Jean Lassiter. I live and work here in Salem, and I am employed by Looking Glass Youth and Family Services in Eugene. And I'm here to talk to you a little bit, briefly, hopefully, about the report that you have in front of you that Mickey introduced. And this report is the culmination of around about 2 years following the passage of House Bill 2202, and it's a work of passion and love, actually. And I'm really happy to be here talking to you about it. We got together a really quite significant group of people to put this report together. The Partners for Children and Families is a multi-agency group, as Mickey mentioned, and there was a subcommittee appointed to do the work of House Bill 2202, and we met for about 18 months or better to put this report together, and our process was rather exhaustive. The accomplishments of this report and the work done by the subcommittee are pretty significant. One of the first, our guiding principles in putting this report together, and these are the principles that undergird the whole Runaway and Homeless Youth Initiative that has begun 4 to 6 years ago, is that services for at-risk runaway and homeless youth should be available to youth that need them. There should be local and state level framework ensuring service delivery that is responsive to the needs of each community. That the responsibility for the care of these youth lies with parents, youth, families, communities, and government. And that community-based service models are most successful when they are collaborative in nature, sustainable, diversely funded, and consistent with national standards and evidence-based practices. So we had a pretty a substantive set of guiding principles. House Bill 2202 charged the committee, the subcommittee, with looking at policy development, data collection and technical assistance, state and local planning, and resources and service delivery in site development. So that's a pretty big undertaking. One of the first things we did to accomplish that was we defined homeless and runaway youth for our purposes, and that there's an extensive two-page definition in the report that you have in front of you. Our working definition is that runaway and homeless youth are non-system youth not being served by or ineligible for publicly funded human services, or youth ages 11 to 24 who have fallen out of state systems of care, including juvenile justice, child welfare, education, mental health, and substance abuse. The second thing that we accomplished in the months that we were together was that we, as charged by the bill, is that we worked very hard to integrate this population and their needs into the planning and infrastructure of the Commission on Children and Families. And really what that represents, what that means, is that for the first time, the needs of this population specifically were put into the guidelines for the comprehensive planning process. Outcomes for this population were identified. Strategies for communities to meet the needs of this population were incorporated into that planning document that goes out to all 36 counties. In addition to that, in the latter part of 2006, the state Progress Board, the Oregon Progress Board, passed created a benchmark of positive youth development. And for those of us who work with youth, that's a significant accomplishment, because what that does is that gives everyone who works with high needs, high risk youth an opportunity to reframe their work and look at the positive things that happen with and for young people in our communities, and to set a high-level benchmark that leads us to in our decision-making and establishing our outcomes. And that includes runaway and homeless youth. Well, one of the other things that we did, the third thing that we did, was that we went out and conducted six community forums all across the state of Oregon. We went to six regions and met with over 100 people and 11 counties. And we had a day-long seminar with those folks. And some of the consistent results that we found in our process in working with these counties, some of the consistent universal messages that we heard is that there is a consistent inability to meet the needs for emergency shelter and long-term shelter. It was cited at all locations. Transportation to resources and youth accessing resources were also pervasive barriers. Keeping runaway and homeless youth in school and reconnecting youth to schools was also universally cited. Insufficient capacity for health, mental health, alcohol, and other drug treatment is a huge issue faced by these young people. Inability of communities to coordinate access to services and establish a multi-agency continuum was also very frequently cited. In other words, our rural communities, our frontier communities, really need the benefit of expertise. They need assistance from people such as ourselves to come in and say, have you thought about this, or have you examined this, or what are your barriers, what are your gaps, how can we help you build a continuum that responds to the needs of these young people? And we heard that quite frequently. And lastly, we came up with recommendations. So all of this discovery led us to a set of recommendations that are included in your report. There are recommendations divided up into three categories, basically those having to do with policies, those having to do with data collection and practice and technical assistance, and those having to do with resource and service delivery and site development. They're in the executive summary of your report, as well as the end. That would be right under the first right under the cover in the first part of the report.
Great.
And as this is a policy committee, it seems sensible to focus on the policy-related recommendations. And those are fairly specific. We have looked at the development of these policies in other states. And in what we've discovered is that we are probably in the forefront of requesting that these policies be established, and in the manner in which we're asking these policies to be established. The first recommendation that the committee came up with was to designate the OCCF, the Oregon Commission on Children and Families, as the state agency that facilitates the integration of community-based and state agency resources for runaway and homeless youth. We also recommend that OCCF and Partners for Children and Families, as established by Senate Bill 555, be responsible for establishing a permanent framework for the integration of services and supports for runaway and homeless youth on local and state levels. We recommend that state laws are established that create policies that support families in crisis and provide for access to services for young people whose families who are unable or unwilling to allow them to access supports and services. We also want to ensure that policies support communities in developing a network of services designed for positive development of youth and directed at producing outcomes related to the shelter of youth, family well-being, reconnecting of the young person to education and employment. We also want to encourage state agencies responsible for youth and young adults to establish long-term goals that seek to positively impact the underlying causes of runaway and homeless youth. And we want to continue to integrate the needs, goals, and outcomes from local coordinated comprehensive plans for runaway and homeless youth into the Partners for Children and Families statewide planning and policy recommendations. As I mentioned before, I don't want to I really don't want to take too much time, but there are recommendations in front of you around data collection and technical assistance, which refer to the need to have consistent information about this population and the results that can be achieved if we support the services for these young people. And they are significant, and my colleagues will speak to those. And then the third set of recommendations really has some work laid out for this biennium for the Oregon Commission on Children and Families and the Partners for Children and Families, is that there needs to be more extensive study about the impact of this population on state systems of care, or lack of impact. We've done reporting for the last 30 years on this population, and folks will speak to that here today. But we still have more information to discover about how these young people are served or not served in our state systems and how we can provide better access to supports and services for them in communities. And I think I'll pass the baton unless you have questions of me.
Thanks. I think we're going to hold our questions until we get through this panel. Thank you very much, Jean.
Representative Tomei, committee, my name is Galen Phipps. I'm the chair of the Oregon Homeless and Runaway Youth Coalition, and I also am the director of Runaway Services at Looking Glass Youth and Family Services in Eugene, Oregon. I have been working on this project, as Jean said, for the last 6 or 7 years, and I'm also very pleased to be before you this morning. This is a dream come true for a lot of us in this room, so I wanted to thank you for that. I'm here really to ask again that Oregon begin to address the needs for policies and laws that provide for the care and services for runaway and homeless youth and their families across the state. Over the last 30 years, there have been numerous reports and documents surrounding runaway and homeless youth, and the recommendations have led to the same conclusions, that there are young people in this state that require services, that end up running away from home and being homeless, and do not rise to the level of intervention through public services systems. They aren't picked up by the child welfare system. They drop out of schools, and there's no way for them to reengage in schools. Are involved with families that are neglectful and get involved with drug and alcohol use. They may get involved briefly with drug and alcohol services, and because they don't have a responsible parent to keep them engaged in services, then they fall out of those services and continue on their road into homelessness. As part of the process that we've been in through the state, is that we're putting together an infrastructure here that we're in a position where we can integrate the federal standards around services for these young people with state and local information and research that we're putting together around establishing best practice for this population. The federal standards focus on four basic areas: safety, graduation, meaning graduation from programs and services that lead to self-sufficiency, positive youth development, making sure that young people get the opportunities and supports they need in order to develop the character and strengths that they need to be productive adults, and efficiency in programs. The outcome in relation to the amount of dollars that are put into services to establish the lowest rate possible and getting the most efficient outcome for their service dollar. And around the state, we have excellent examples of efficient services that are being provided to 5,000 or 6,000 of these young people a year. Of the 24,000 youth that have been identified annually that need services, we are serving a fraction of those. And in fact, many programs, because of a lack of service capability, turn away as many youth as they serve. So we are in the process of moving forward with several outcome goals, reconciling youth with family whenever that's possible, to help them reengage with education and services and support so they can deal with the situations that led to their running away and homelessness. We want to make sure that they have access to emergency services and housing, that all of these services are focused around a positive youth development framework. So we continually, regardless of their circumstance, provide the opportunities and supports they need in order to, for them to move forward. And in terms of outcomes for these young people, anywhere from 80% to 90% of the young persons that enter services that are existing in the state, that are examples of what is possible for us to put together once we get a state infrastructure together, 80% to 90% of those young people become self-sufficient, reconcile with their families if their families are viable, they acquire employment or continue with their education skills. So we've got some good examples of what the state is capable of. We just need this committee's support in moving forward with establishing policies and laws that enable communities to move forward with this project.
Thank you very much.
And I'll turn it over again.
Good morning. Thank you very much for the opportunity to be here and to talk about these kids. I'm Janet Ahrens, the Executive Director of the Oregon Alliance of Children's Programs. We're a statewide association of nonprofit organizations that provide services to children and families. We represent about $150 million worth of services in all six of the major children's service systems, and that and we do include runaway and homeless as one of those service systems, even though technically there is no service system for them. But maybe after this morning, it'll be a more correct statement. The Alliance supports both the recommendations that are made by the Partners for Children and Families and the original policy option package that was submitted by the Commission requesting $4.6 million in funding to establish a statewide, locally driven system of shelter and basic services throughout the state of Oregon. And that would be something that every county would have an opportunity to begin to develop with that kind of support. We believe the state of Oregon has a clear responsibility to ensure that the most basic of services are provided for these children. And they are simply a safe place to stay, an adult to help them reconcile with and return to their family, and information on services that can keep kids at home, in school, or prepared to work. Since 1977, which was when Jean was doing her research, discovered the first multi-pound report prepared for the state of Oregon on runaway and homeless youth 30 years ago. And since that time, we have been researching and reporting back to the state of Oregon, to state agencies, and to legislative bodies on these kids and their needs. And it really is boiled down to three questions that are asked over and over and over again and are addressed in each of the reports. And they are, how many kids are we talking about? Why are they on the streets instead of at home? And what is it that we're going to get if we fund a system to help them? And for 30 years, the answers have been very much the same. The number one reason that children are runaway and homeless is because there are issues of drug and alcohol abuse in the home. The number two reason is because of abuse and neglect. investing in safe shelter and basic services gets children, as I said, opportunity to be back home. It keeps them in school, and it prepares them to work. As many as 94% of children transitioned out of shelter go to a safe placement off the street. Family reconciliation success is 70 and 80%. And it's 67% cheaper to provide youth shelter than it is to house them in detention, which is where some of them land. Not only has the only answer that hasn't remained the same in the last 30 years are the number of kids that we're talking about. Between the ages of 11 and 21, we're now talking about 24,000 children throughout the state of Oregon that are homeless or runaway at some time during the course of a given year. 18,000 of those may be looking for a safe shelter on any given night in that year. Those are very significant numbers.
I'm going to violate my own rule and ask you why you went up to the age of 21.
Actually, the report talks about up to the age of 25, and Jean would be the best person to answer that question.
Okay, you can answer that at the end.
That's good. For 30 years, the reports have read the same. You can go to the end chapter of each of them and find the same list of bulleted recommendations made and the same fundamental solutions that that are applicable appear in the report that you have in front of you. Despite thousands and thousands of hours given by hundreds of experts in this area through 30 years of research and work to answer those three questions repeatedly, we still don't have a state agency that was willing to step up and take responsibility for these kids. We still don't have a system in place to serve them, and we still don't have funding to support it. We struggled with state agencies who have actually contributed to exacerbating the problem. You were very astute in passing a law last session that stopped the Department of Human Services from allowing children in foster care to be dismissed from the state's custody with no planning for safe housing or transition back into the community. That action alone addressed almost 40% of the runaway and homeless population that exists in Multnomah County. But that's not enough. The recommendations are here before you, and my request that you support consideration of the $4.6 million original proposal is are two more actions that we need to take. We have some good news here. For the first time, we have a state agency who has stepped forward and asked to have responsibility for these kids and is willing to build a system. And for the first time, we have a governor who agreed to some startup funding to begin to roll out the development of this system. But the bad news is that for the first time, we have a legislature who told them both no.
I want to remind you, this is not
ways and means. Yes. And these individuals in this room are not personally responsible for that decision. And we have communicated our concern with the individuals who are. But we need advocates. We need people to talk with our colleagues and to help support reconsideration of that. And we can't do that with just three people. We need more support. And we still do have time and opportunity to address that. So Oregon will never have enough money to do everything that it wants to do, but it will always have the ability to prioritize what its most important issues are to address. And we're hoping through with your help and support of the recommendations in this report and your advocacy among your colleagues that we'll have that opportunity to implement the recommendations and establish this necessary system.
Thank you so much. Any questions at this panel?
Madam Chair, actually, Galen, I appreciate all of your testimony. I can think of many, many times over the past years and everything when I used to work with state police where you'd stumble onto a runaway juvenile. And it was just, it was just a sad situation. I appreciate your thoughts on reconciliation. But Galen, you're tied in with Looking Glass down there. What do you think? I see this maybe as a mechanism, and this was explored years ago, the whole concept of keeping kids in school with a daytime curfew. I'm just, if you've ever explored that, your thoughts on it.
The city of Eugene did have conversations about it about 3 years ago, actually. And the conversation continued, and we really fell on the side of enforcement of that curfew, and it basically falls to law enforcement, and we are already taxed to the limit around enforcing actual criminals that are, you know, that need intervention, and we really saw it as an instrument where it begins to move young people toward criminalization. I mean, we need to be careful about not setting up a system where, because of a circumstance that may have nothing to do with school, that they're not being supported to go to school. They're not. I mean, so it may be other issues besides just they're not attending school. They may have a mental health problem or a family neglect issue or whatever else, that you hinge it all on a curfew. So it's a much bigger issue than just keeping kids in school. And so part of what we're trying to do statewide and locally is to begin to have a comprehensive dialogue about what are these community issues that are that set up young people to be forced out of these systems, and how do we set it up so they don't get forced out, and what are the best ways to re-engage them in systems without either criminalizing their behavior or identifying them as the problem, as opposed to a more systemic kind of issue?
Okay. We're going to have to move along. Okay. If you, and I know you've got a quick question.
Thank you for being here. Thank you, Madam Chair. Could you, I saw the definition of runaway and homeless youth in the report, and I do agree that it should be up to 24. There's a whole lot of issues for young adults, but can you describe the difference between the runaway and the homeless, and why that's included, and how they fit differently and what you're proposing? I'm just, that's not clear.
Sure. Really, I think the way that we conceptualize this is a continuum, and that running away is a coping behavior. Running away is a response by a young person to what they perceive as an untenable situation. Now, most kids who do run away end up going home again, and hopefully that home works on that. But for those who don't, or those who perennially continue to use running away as a way to cope with that distressing circumstance for them, if there is an intervention, then homelessness is one thing that happens. So they become, you know, developmental stages for young people are required. You know, they have certain developmental tasks that they have to accomplish in order to become an adult. So that's part of what they're coping with. And when they go into the street environment, what happens is they start to get their needs met. And if they continue to get their needs met in that unhealthy environment, then the chances are likely that they will be pulled into a homelessness situation. So we clarify that because it's really two ends of a continuum of risk behavior and circumstances. Does that make sense?
It does. Thank you. Okay. Thank you very much. And we have other people who are wanting to testify. Do you have last words?
Chair Tomei, could I just, and members of the committee, just make some last words? You may ask us, what are you really asking? What are we asking you to do? We were directed to come back to you, the Substantive Policy Committee, with the recommendations from this multi-agency group. We are asking that, in fact, you endorse the recommendations by this subcommittee and then send your messages to both the governor and the legislature so that in any funding decisions that might be made, they could take all of this into consideration. Thank you
very much. Thank you very much, panel. Thank you for all that you do. We have three other people who signed up, Martin Rafferty, Jerry Fest, and Karen Nibbler. Is there anyone else who came to testify? Okay, Michael. Am I missing somebody here? Great. Mike, I'm going to have you last because you at least weren't on my list. Okay. Martin, please go ahead.
All right. my name is Martin Rafferty, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Not the Ways and Means Committee.
No.
I am a resident of Eugene, Oregon, Lane County. And I was a homeless runaway youth myself when I was younger. And I'm here to talk about my story, but I spent dinner last night with a homeless shelter with some youth, and I want to address your question because it was a very interesting conversation with me to have with a youth last night who she identifies as a runaway youth. And she was trying to explain to me why she thinks that that Oregon doesn't want to help runaway and homeless youth. Her explanation to me was that because she was abused in her home, she was molested in her home, and when she left her home, when she ran away from the abuse, she was abused in worse ways. If you can imagine. So it's her conception that she thinks that adults want her to stay in one bad situation rather than being in a worse situation. So I know that for technical reasons, homeless runaway, but that's what it looks like to the youth. What the difference between homeless and runaway. Homeless is when your mom or your dad are so high on drugs, or they don't have a place for you to come back, or they kick you out, and you have nowhere to go. You have no family. That's the difference for homeless and runaway for me. Running away means you're leaving. You're mostly leaving abuse. You're mostly leaving poverty. I've been in the crowd of youth who are homeless and runaway, and I've never heard of any of these stereotypes where a youth left to hang out with friends, or a youth left because they didn't like to be inside at 10 o'clock at night. Those are absurd stereotypes that I'm trying to crush, and at a young age it's hard to do that. I'm asking, I know that you do not have any funds. I'm asking anyone who can hear me in this room, including yourselves, not to be advocates, but to be champions. There is no framework right now for homeless and runaway youth in Oregon. And we are a cold and rainy state. And in my travels, when I say I'm from Eugene, a lot of people associate Eugene with homelessness. I don't know why. I mean, we have a lot of homeless people, but I just assumed a lot of cities have a lot of homeless people.
Martin, I'm going to ask you to wrap it up.
Okay.
We have several other people.
Yeah, okay. So I just want to say that youth are watching your actions. people care, and that we are going to... It's not going to get wrapped up today if you make a different decision or if you're not advocates. We'll remember the names.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, next I think is Jenny. I have Jenny. Jerry Fest. Jerry.
Good morning. My name is Jerry Fest. I'm a youth development consultant who's been working with runaway and homeless youth here in Portland since about 1978. I'll really only take a minute of your time because the reason why I'm here is simply to advocate in support of this. And I guess from my perspective, I'm really tired of seeing my collection of reports on runaway and homeless youth in Oregon growing every year. And since 1978, we've been doing reports and reports and reports, but we've never implemented the system that's needed to really serve these young people. And as an advocate, I'm really growing tired of this being looked at as an afterthought or a temporary condition. You know, every year new youth are coming to the streets. And we talk about the potential that's being lost. I'd like to also put on there the lives that are being lost. Young people are dying on the streets of Oregon every year, and that's unacceptable to me. But in terms of how I can be most useful, I think, in just the brief time that I have here, I think I'd like to take a moment to address Representative Olson's questions about actions such as daytime curfews to keep kids in schools. I think we have to be careful when we look at doing things like that about also invoking the law of unintended consequences. And the reason why these kids aren't in school in the first place is because for these young people, the schools are not meeting their needs. And trying to come up with a solution like a daytime curfew is not going to force the young people back into the schools where the needs aren't being met in the first place. It's going to force them underground during the daytime where it's harder for us to reach them with services. Runaway homeless youth is not something that we can legislate out of existence, but we can legislate a system of care to take care of them. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And Karen?
Hi. I'm representing the League of Women Voters, and I think you got a position statement and also the study on homeless youth that the League did over the last 2 years. And it was hard to pull all the information together for the study, but we had an easy time when it came down to writing our position, because after spending a certain amount of time with that information, it was fairly clear to us. And our position basically looks at a broader scope than I think the Runaway Youth Coalition did, because we looked at what you can do to prevent these kids from being homeless in the first place, and from a policy standpoint. And what I think you want to do is help families stay together. And there's a lot of financial problems among families and lack of affordable housing. And there are some things that the state can do that will help keep these families together and keep these kids from breaking loose in the first place. So that was one kind of set of conclusions that we came to. And then the second set was, when these kids are separated from their families, what do we do? And we feel that, you know, they need all the supports they can get, and they need shelters and food programs, education programs, health care, mental health and addiction treatment, and outreach to these kids to get them into services. So we kind of broke it down into two separate things. So anyway, that's just briefly. Also, I'm on the Benton County Commission on Children and Families, and we have a shelter in Corvallis that serves both Benton and Linn counties. And this shelter opened in October of 2001, and it's been operating during that time, and has a capacity of 9 kids. And The references are usually from sometimes kids themselves and parents and juvenile departments and sometimes DHS and police. And they work with the families to try to get the kids either back with the family or with a relative if they can't go back home. And they have like a 60% rate of kids returning to their families. And I think that's a good outcome, you know, to get them connected with their family and also to stay in their own communities, because a lot of times these kids drift off to the bigger cities and get in with a group of kids and who are on the streets and stay with them, and that's not a good outcome. So, and also I have a background as a juvenile counselor. So when I was a working person, I had these kids all the time that were loose, and we needed to have a place to have them stay so they would stabilize and we would know where they were. And so we were in favor of having a shelter in our community where we could put these kids when they were loose and weren't with anybody. So I personally, I'm in favor of having a system of shelter placements all over the state. I think every county should have a shelter for their kids. And I think there needs to be some legal changes, because currently the system deals with kids from 12 to 18 with one set of laws, and kids over 18 with have a different set of requirements. And you're not supposed to mix kids from 12 to 18 with older kids, because DHS usually has to certify a shelter that's for 12 to 18-year-olds. So if they want to mix 16 to 25-year-olds, they need to structure it differently or change the laws differently. And also, runaway definition legally is that they've been reported by their parents for being away from home without permission for 24 hours. And but the homeless kids, sometimes the parents aren't reporting that they're gone anymore, or, you know, the parents are boot them out or something, and so they sometimes are away without runaway reports.
And sometimes I'm going to ask you to wrap it up. We've got two other
people
wanting to.
Well, that was about, you know, what I wanted to cover. So I appreciate the opportunity to be here and join the discussion.
Thank you, and thanks for all the work you've done, especially for the written materials. That will be very helpful to us. Thank you so much. Okay.
Hello, my name is Allie Jameson, and I'm with the Child Welfare Partnership, and I'm also a day counselor for New Avenues for Youth in Portland. I'm here today to advocate for the homeless and runaway youth, but also to share with you a statistic that is alarming, and that is 40% of the homeless and runaway youth are reported their last stable living situation is foster care, which suggests that they are wards of the state and that the state is unable to provide for their needs and to prevent them from becoming homeless, which is why this report here is so important and the recommendations are as well. I believe it gives Oregon an opportunity to set a precedent in that it's saying that we have this standard of care, the standard of services that we are going to provide to our children, 40% of which are under state care. And finally, I know we're running short on time. I know that all of us are in this room because we believe that if there is an injustice that we see and we have the ability to do something about it, it is our obligation to do so. All of the people in this room that work in the homeless and runaway youth continuum are there for very pure reasons, because they see an injustice and they have an ability and they choose to do something about it or to try. And this is why I am asking you to support the recommendations of this report, because you have the ability to do so. And for at least 40% of these youth, you have the obligation as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Great message. Thank you very much. Okay, Mr. Balter.
Hi, I'm Mike Balter, Director of Boys and Girls Aid Society. A couple quick points. One, I think this is good public policy, and I'd really ask you to move it forward in the legislative process. The state needs a focal point for this conversation for these youth, and currently OIA and DHS are not those centers. I think you just have to face that dilemma. I would call these young people the not enough kids. You know, basically they're not delinquent enough to be considered public safety threats, and yet they're on the fringes of juvenile delinquency. They're not abused enough to cross a threshold to be involved in the child welfare system, yet many of them have been in the child welfare system and are moving through it and not very well. So I think the last point I'd make is that oftentimes people think of this as a downtown Portland dilemma or an I-5 challenge. We provide services for homeless runaway youth in Washington County and Clackamas County. In the latest homeless youth report from the schools, there were over 700 adolescents in Washington County that were considered homeless and going to school. So we know there's an additional substantial number of young people who are not attending school considered homeless. This is a growing, serious problem in this state. And so first, I just want to endorse this as good public policy and ask you to move it forward. And I think we need to allocate some resources, and I'd like you to recommend resources that would actualize this policy. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Balter. Any quick questions of this panel before we run off to the floor? All right. Thank you so much, all of you, and thanks to everyone who came to Salem today to talk on this issue. And you're right, this committee is very concerned about this issue, and some hope to something. Thank you very much. And with that, I will close the House Committee on Human Services and Women's Wellness.
Are you okay, Sam?
Yeah.
You don't sound good at all.